For our first presentation, I'd like to ask Mark Singer, the chief of colorectal at Loyola, to come and speak with us about creating the perfect stoma in an imperfect world.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate this opportunity to share my thoughts on creating the perfect stoma. Here are my disclosures. This stoma is gorgeous, and I think we would all be very happy if all of our stomas turned out like this. But of course, we all know that's not always how things go. Anybody who is taking care of a patient with a difficult stoma fully appreciates the difficulties for both the surgeon and the patient alike. Just to put things in perspective, this is actually a very common problem in the United States and worldwide. In excess of 100,000 new ostomies are created each year. And data from large data sets such as NISQIP suggest a very high rate of complications, close to half, and higher in patients undergoing emergency operations. That's from a data reporting perspective. From a patient perspective, there's multiple papers demonstrating that nearly 50%, sometimes higher, are perceived to be problematic by the patients themselves. This often has a dramatic, if not devastating, effect on patients' quality of life. And we shouldn't underestimate the cost of this problem, both to our healthcare system as well as to the patients personally, who end up purchasing many of their stoma appliances, clothes, time off work, et cetera. Because there's such a high rate of complications with ostomy surgery, it really drives us to figure out ways where we can make the more perfect stoma. And in addition to creating a perfect stoma, I think it's important to emphasize or to focus on preventing complications right up front, because we know they're going to happen at such a high rate. And I would also encourage everybody to consider all stomas to be permanent at the time you make them. Although patients are right from day one getting ready to get rid of their stoma, we know that in some populations, upwards of 50% of stomas that were intended to be temporary will remain permanent for the lifetime of the patient. So for the remainder of the talk, we'll address these issues. First, how do we prepare the patients? How do we mark them? Consideration of what type of stoma is best. And then we'll talk about some of the technical details of constructing stomas and preventing complications. So like most things, we start by preparing the patients. There's many resources available for patients and surgeons and stoma nurses alike. Here are just two examples, one from the Diseases of the Colon and Rectum publication with the practice parameters from the American Society, and also a joint position paper from the WOCN Society, and these, of course, are available. This is not just about telling patients what's going to happen. It's really much more about patient engagement, and whether you use the material available from the WOCN Society or you've developed your own specific materials at your hospital. Engaging the patient will lead to a better outcome. And this has been documented again in multiple publications. If the stoma nurse engages the patient before and after surgery, it's not just better for them, but it will decrease the complications, readmission, length of stay, cost of care, all the parameters that we're interested in. And just as importantly, it allows patients to get a better sense of self-care skills. We've all seen patients who have a good-looking stoma, but they're unable to change the appliance themselves, and they rely on caretakers, or sometimes this requires them to be long-term residents of a nursing facility. More active engagement by the patient with the WOCN will help patients become more independent. Again, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of the WOCN participation, if possible, in driving good outcome. Stoma nurses do things that surgeons are just not very good at doing. They talk to patients about ways to empty their appliance. I have to admit, I never talk to a patient about this kind of thing, but it's really a big deal for them. They talk to patients about very specific dietary concerns. What can you do to go swimming after you have a stoma or sexual issues? Stoma nurses will do whatever it takes to make sure they've provided appropriate education, including putting on the ostomy apron when necessary. Now, let's get on to marking the site. Again, if you can engage the stoma nurse preoperatively, that's always going to be your best option, but sometimes that's not an option, or you may not have one available at your facility. We know that preoperative marking reduces postoperative complications. Choosing the best site is going to lead to a better outcome. This is best assessed in your outpatient setting, where you can ask patients to change positions. You can see where they wear their clothes. You can engage the caregivers. If necessary, you can do this on the operating room table, but by far that is not the best time to do it. Just to briefly review how you mark a patient, The goal is to find the apex of the infraumbilical fat pad within the borders of the rectus, so right here or here. And you really want to consider the faceplate, not just one tiny dot where you're going to make your incision, but you have to think about where the wafer of the appliance is going to lay. And you want to check your patients in multiple positions and ask them where they wear their pants. This is a huge patient dissatisfier if they need to buy new pants because they don't like if it overlaps their appliance. Some more information on marking. Again, it should be within the rectus muscle. There's some evidence suggesting this can reduce prolapse and hernia, although that's not entirely clear. Look at position issues of the patient. Do they have contractures? Are they in a wheelchair? And if so, make sure you mark them in their own wheelchair because their posture will change the location of the mark. Look at their scars and folds and pendulous breasts. Talk to the patients about their manual dexterity or visual impairments. The best thing, if a patient has had a previous stoma, because they'll know everything about the position and where they can keep a good seal. And if multiple stomas are required, perhaps after a pelvic exoneration, consider different horizontal planes. If one of the stomas requires an ostomy belt, you don't want it to overlap with the other ostomy. And ask patients to remove their clothing entirely. Just pulling down their pants sometimes will change the contour of their abdominal wall. Again, emphasize you're trying to find a place for the wafer, not just to make a dot. And take great caution to avoid scars and creases. And by all means, avoid a midline. If you see a stoma that's in the midline, you almost never get a good seal because the scar is going to always lead to leakage. And after you make your mark, have the patient change positions. Make several marks. Use both sides. Use upper and lower. Give yourself options in the operating room. And many stoma nurses will tell you that a flat surface is really your number one priority. Patients can find a way to work around everything else. Sometimes they can't see the stoma very well, but if you don't have a flat landing zone for the wafer, you're never going to get a good seal. So again, when you're marking the patient, bring one of the appliances so that you can put the faceplate right on the patient. Look at the folds. Look at them in multiple positions. You can see in obese patients, you want to avoid putting it too low because the patients can't see it here. And when you ask them to sit up or bend over, you can see all of a sudden all these folds become much more apparent. You want to ask them to change position. This seemed like a good mark here, but when the patient sits up, completely disappears. Similarly, this patient, if her appliance were higher, her pendulous breast would overlap the stoma, and that's very uncomfortable, of course, for the patients. In large patients, you want to make sure you mark them higher rather than lower, because if the appliance is down here, they can't see it, they can't reach it very well. So keep them high. Again, in the bigger patients, you want the stomas higher so they can access them. Now let's talk about the different types of stomas. Of course, the first decision to make is whether they're going to have an ileostomy or a colostomy, and that's largely driven by the nature of the operation. But as you consider and counsel the patients, you want to talk about the other things. What's going to be coming out of it? What's the odor? Is this permanent or temporary? And then intraoperatively, the limitations of the bowel and the mesentery, blood supply, etc. So let's just go through construction of each of the different types of stomas. Again, it always starts with preparing the site. Typically, we talk about excising a disc of skin and making a cruciate incision in the fascia that will accept two fingers. This, of course, is quite subjective. Surgeons' fingers are different sizes. Patients' bowel is different sizes, but that's just a general starting point. Now, there are several different types of stoma, as you know. End stomas, here you see an end colostomy and end ileostomy, perhaps the most straightforward. But also consider the loop end stoma, and we'll talk about that. And here you see a typical loop ileostomy, but also consider the divided loop stomas. Start with the end colostomy, perhaps the most straightforward. After finding the appropriate mark and pulling the colon through the abdominal wall, you're simply going to amputate the staple line and then mature at full thickness colon to the skin. Now, a colostomy should protrude just a bit over the skin, somewhere around 1 centimeter. A colostomy does not need to stand very high above the skin, but you certainly don't want it to retract. And that has to do with the solid output. So just a bit of protrusion is appropriate. Whereas an ileostomy, as you know, you're going to bring through the skin, and then you're going to evert it and create a Brook ileostomy by everting it and placing three sutures through the mucosa as well, through the full thickness bowel as well as the serum muscular to anchor it before attaching it to the dermis. This will give you usually somewhere around 2 centimeters of protrusion. Because the output is generally liquidy, this will give you a much better seal of the faceplate around the base of the stoma. Moving on to loop ileostomy, here you see a good looking loop ileostomy. When pulling this through, it's often very helpful to place marking sutures. It's not difficult for these to twist or you lose track, or sometimes you just forget which end is which. So putting one or two marking sutures, and I would encourage you to mark these the same way every time so that there's no question in your mind. Pulling them through with something to grab onto can be helpful. I would suggest a Penrose drain because there's some give. If you use something more rigid like a 4x4, it may in fact tear through the bowel if you're really putting a lot of tension on it. Again, you want to mark the proximal and distal ends, functional and non-functional ends, pull them through. And then when you make your incision, I would remind you to make the incision really more towards the non-functional side. You don't want to divide it in the middle. And the reason for that is if you make it near the non-functional side, most of the real estate will then be occupied by the functional limb. If you divide it in the middle, you're going to get two equal limbs, which is not ideal. Only one of these is working. You don't need to see this much of a non-functional limb. If you divide it near the non-functional limb, most of the stoma will be occupied by the functional limb. In truth, you should just barely see the non-functional limb. And so this should be the desired result. It's nice and round, it's elevated off the skin, and you can barely see that non-functional limb. It's only venting a bit of gas and mucus. You don't need to spend much of the precious real estate on that non-functional side. Moving on to a loop colostomy, similarly, you'll pull it through with a Penrose drain, you'll divide it and secure it down. Typically, this will be done in the transverse colon or the sigmoid colon. These, in my opinion, are the worst of all the stomas. The loop colostomies are bulky because of the size of the colon, and they give you sort of the worst of both worlds in that the output has a bad odor because it's stool, and it also is liquidy because they're too proximal oftentimes that you don't get solid output. So you get sort of the worst aspects of a colostomy and an ileostomy together. And these tend to prolapse at a very high rate, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% of these prolapse. And when it happens, it can be quite problematic. You would imagine it's difficult or impossible for patients to manage their pouch with these. This is probably the most common ostomy that I revise because of prolapse. When making a decision about diverting, often surgeons are faced with either a loop ileostomy or a loop colostomy, and you can see the pros and cons here. In general, loop ileostomy is going to give a better result. It's fewer infections when you close it, less prolapse, less odor, and patients have demonstrated improved quality of life overall. Now, for sure, there can be difficulties with high output and dehydration, especially when these are new, but usually loop ileostomy is going to be a better method of diversion. Now, let's move on to the divided stomas, first looking at the end loop stoma. The terminology is often confusing. And there is multiple names for the same kind of stoma. This is a loop stoma because there's two limbs, but it's matured as an end, so that's the modifier. So for this type of stoma, you would divide the bowel, bring both limbs through, and amputate just the little corner of the non-functional limb, and then amputate the full staple line of the functional limb, and mature them side by side in the same wound. The functional as a standard end ileostomy, Brook ileostomy, and then just the corner of the non-functional limb. And I think this even overestimates the size of it. It should really just be a tiny corner, enough to vent the gas and mucus. This can be a helpful technique. It's easy to construct. It does not require a rod because there's no tissue really in between the two limbs. It gives you a single wound for venting the distal bowel. It's usually still circular, and so managing the wafer is easy for the patients, and it does not require a laparotomy when you go to close it. This is especially helpful, I think, for the ileocolostomies. Imagine a patient with, as in this diagram, either cancers, but this is very helpful in patients with Crohn's disease. You're doing an ileocecectomy, and because of their nutrition or steroids or whatever, you don't feel comfortable to perform an anastomosis. So you bring up the ileum and do an ileocolostomy, mature an end ileostomy here with just the corner of the colon. And you can see you get a nice result with that, and they do not require a laparotomy when you're ready to close them. This can be done with the colon as well. Perhaps you're taking out a segment of the transverse colon, or if there were an emergency sigmoid resection and you don't want to do a laparotomy to close them, just bring them out together and loop colostomy. Now, thinking about the loop colostomy that we talked about before versus the end loop, you can see that this is much less bulky. There's going to be less prolapse from the distal limb, and it's easier for patients to pouch. And so I think often a better choice than a loop colostomy. Moving on to the loop end ileostomy. Again, the nomenclature is sometimes difficult, but this is an end ileostomy because you can see there's a blind end here. There's just one limb functioning, but it's matured as a loop. So you have an oversewn end, a blind end here, you bring it through the wall, and then mature it as a standard loop ileostomy. This is a very helpful technique when the patient is obese. Sometimes the end of the bowel simply won't reach the skin in patients with a very thick abdominal wall, or if the mesentery is thickened, perhaps from Crohn's, inflammation, previous operations, but for whatever reason, you can't unroll the end of the ileum out to the skin. But the side will often reach very nicely. So this is a great option, and patients can manage the loop ileostomy just as well as the end construction. Now, last, always think about complications. Again, almost half patients are going to have complications, so think about them right up front and do what you can to prevent those complications. We'll talk briefly about stoma rods. Here you see a variety of commercially available products. They come in different shapes and sizes. But in truth, stoma rods can be difficult. They erode, as you see here. And as you know, the peristomal skin is a very precious commodity. And if you get an ulcer here, it can take weeks or months to heal. Also, when patients have a new stoma, you know how hard it is to put this appliance on when there's a rod there. It's hard for you. It's hard for the stoma nurses. It's definitely hard for a patient with a new stoma. So I would suggest you try as hard as you can to avoid rods. There's actually very little evidence suggesting they prevent retraction. That's the complication you're trying to prevent. They just don't seem to do it very well. So if you need to mobilize the bowel a bit more to pull up more ileum, do that, but avoid the rod. If you find it necessary to put one in, remove them early to try and avoid ulceration, or consider flexible alternatives like a red rubber catheter, or here's a commercially available product that secures to itself so that you don't have to suture it to the skin. Avoid the oval stoma. This is not a problem physiologically, but it's a problem for pouching. Patients tend to cut circles, or if they order their appliances pre-cut, they come as circles, and they're going to get a mismatch if it's oval. This happens most often because you're pulling too hard on the skin as you cut the circle. So I would suggest cutting a circle without any tension, make the full circle, and then grab it with an instrument to help finish off that incision. Ischemia, of course, can be a devastating problem requiring reoperation, and nobody tries to do this, but you know, we do have tools now, real-time imaging in the operating room with ICG. Fluorescence can be helpful not just to view an anastomosis, but also to view a stoma. If you have concern, go ahead and take a look at that. Peristomal hernia. This is quite a significant problem for many patients, and it's unsightly. It makes it hard for them to keep their pouch. They get pain just like with any kind of hernia. Some would suggest placing the hernia through the rectus muscle can help to reduce that. The evidence on that is not that clear, and it certainly does not always work. There's a lot of ways to fix peristomal hernia, and I think we'll be hearing about it in the next talk, but there is a growing amount of data suggesting that prophylaxis of peristomal hernia at the time of stoma creation is quite effective. We're not going to get into the debate of where you put it or what kind of mesh, but you can see here in a recent meta-analysis, you can reduce peristomal hernia significantly if you put in a mesh at the time of creation, and there's no increased incidence of infection. This Cochrane review was published just a couple of months ago with even more trials and more patients looking at one half the rate of peristomal hernia using a mesh at the time of creation. As mentioned before, high output and readmission, especially from ileostomies, can be an ongoing challenge. And there are several things you can employ to help patients get through this period. Early follow-up, especially with the WOCN, patient diaries of their ins and outs can help you address growing dehydration before it lands patients in the emergency room. Using strict care pathways has been demonstrated to reduce readmissions almost to zero. And there is a new device available patients can put on their appliance, which will alert them not just to when their pouch is full, but send real-time emails to the care team in the hospital so they can intervene with high-output stomas. Mucocutaneous separation, you know, this is really just a poorly healing wound like any other, so you do your best to optimize things like nutrition and steroids before surgery. Retraction, most often due to inadequate mobilization. Sometimes it requires a few more minutes of mobilizing the ileum all the way down to the base of the duodenum or mobilizing the colon. Sometimes that means taking down the splenic flexure. And although you want to shorten your operative time, a retracted stoma is going to be a lifetime of misery for the patient. So it's worth investing a bit more time up front. And then last, it's not a technical issue, but patient support is one of the things that really does drive success. It leads to a better patient outcome and a better quality of life. Fortunately, there's a large number of support groups, publications, websites available, both from industry as well as professional societies. There's a gazillion things on the web, which you can find here. There's blogs and support groups. There's even a dating app, because of course ostomates are just like everybody else. There's so many products available, and this is again where the stoma nurses can be helpful. It's impossible to keep up with all the available products, but they do a great job of matching the right products with the right patients. And all this leads to patients really embracing their stoma lifestyle. You know, patients should be encouraged to do all the things they did before surgery. This guy's fighting a war. There's plenty of clothes specifically designed to accommodate stoma pouches. There's lots of specialty products for patients who are interested in participating in athletics or whatever this guy's doing. And of course, there's even a large number of specialty products for intimacy because, again, patients need to live their life same as everybody else. So, in conclusion, to make the perfect ostomy, I emphasize these things. Prepare the patient and yourself as much as possible. Engage the stoma nurses to the largest degree possible before and after surgery. Spend time marking the site. That will drive success afterwards. Consider all the types of stoma, and remember the divided stomas can be a good option. Think of all the complications and do your best to prevent them at the time of their initial surgery. Thank you very much.